All right, and we should begin, we're just gonna start with a study session, and the first item is we're gonna be hearing some information about tax increment financing, which is very important that we understand the nuts and bolts of that a little better. Sam is the person giving the presentation, the gentleman in the little TV screen up there?
That's correct.
And could you introduce him, please?
Yes, he is Rob Stowe. He'll be going through the LTC tax increment financing portion of the study session. And Rob, can you hear us?
I couldn't hear you though. Is he muted, or have you turned up the AV?
I can hear you, thank you.
Now we can hear you, we couldn't before. All right, if you could go ahead and give your presentation, and I'm sure there may be some questions as well.
Great. We should be seeing my screen now.
Yeah.
Great. Well, my name's Bob Stowe, Stowe Development Strategies. I'm a real estate and economic development consultant, been working with your staff and your community development partners on tax increment financing. And what I thought I would do this morning or tonight, just to kick things off, is just give you a really brief overview of tax increment financing in Washington State before we jump into the specific proposal and the analysis that we've been looking at today. So this is the basic model for tax increment financing. It's designed similar in all states in addition to Washington's model. What Washington is unique is that it was really designed so that no existing taxing districts are harmed as a result of the tax increment financing. And so each taxing district in the state that has a TIA will continue to get the existing tax that they received previously. So they're not harmed. And it's the new taxes that get created, that increment that gets created as a result of development that are used then to finance the infrastructure needing the development in the first place. Tax increment financing is available to cities, counties, and ports. Those are the only three entities that can utilize tax increment financing. It's a really powerful economic development tool. And it's designed for a specific project and not that you put infrastructure in and hope that that development would happen. And the rationale for that, of course, is certainly the interest of the city is because you're responsible for any debt that you may issue to finance the public improvements, regardless if the development occurs or not. And that's the reason for really the but-for analysis or but-for requirement. And but-for the infrastructure, the development would not occur. And so we'll need to be able to establish that in the project analysis that we'll be performing. And obviously it results in new increased assessed valuation, which generates the new property tax, creates some public benefits, construction of the improvements that creates both long-term and short-term jobs. And the taxes from the development, again, the premise of the tax increment financing is the taxes from the development fund the public infrastructure. This is a laundry list of sort of a public infrastructure that can be financed with tax increment financing. It's a typical list. It's basically all the things that you would normally associate with public infrastructure. The key is that it has to be owned by a public entity, that being either the city, the county, or the port. Some of the key elements associated with tax increment financing is that you cannot have any more than two active tax increment areas at any one time. They cannot overlap, and both of those combined cannot be more than $200 million of assessed valuation at the time that that tax increment area is created. So you could create one today at $100 million, and then one the next year, another $100 million, so long as you don't exceed that $200 million mark, or 20% of the total assessed valuation of your jurisdiction. Also important is that you can't add any public improvements beyond what you identify in the ordinance when you create a tax increment area after the fact. And so all your public improvements must be identified up front, and then you also cannot change the boundary of that tax increment area once you adopt your ordinance. You must include a date when the construction is expected to occur, and that date can be no longer than 5 years after the adoption of the ordinance. And you can only have the TIA in existence for the time of period that's necessary in order to collect revenue to support any debt issuance that you might have, or no period longer than 25 years. So the ordinance is adopted, sort of the mechanics of that. You adopt an ordinance, you in this next cycle for adoption of a tax increment area ordinance would be June of any year. And so long as you adopt it by the end of May, it would be effective then on June 23rd of this year. Applies to only the local property taxes only, and is limited to the amount that's necessary to fund the infrastructure. So a tax increment area may generate $50 million, but if you only need $10 million, that's all you're going to take out of the tax increment area, is that $10 million over that 25-year period. And then those additional revenues that are not necessary or needed to pay for any of that infrastructure get returned and reallocated back to all the various taxing districts that would have received that revenue. We'll talk more about this later, but there is a project analysis that we're working on now that needs to be submitted to the state. And the key piece here is that the state has 90 days to review that project analysis. And so in order to provide you with an ordinance that allows you to adopt a tax increment area, we'll need to have that to the state by no later than mid-February this year. There's also two public outreach meetings that the city would need to conduct. It cannot be combined with any other topic on your agenda or on the agenda that evening. It's to present exclusively information to the public about the tax increment area. Of course, we mentioned submitting the analysis to the state for review. You also need to publish it in a local newspaper, as well as notice to all the impacted taxing districts. So taxpayer impacts are really minimal, if any at all. That's the same levy rate gets applied to inside the tax increment area as what will be applied outside the tax increment area. The developer will also pay the same, but they're paying more, of course, because the infrastructure is put in and a new AV is being generated as a result of the development. So, specific to the Blaine work, we have just completed step one of a two-step process for evaluating tax increment financing. We've identified a potential TIA. We've assessed some of the private development that we anticipate happening. We've also projected revenues. We've established, at least preliminarily, the nexus between the public infrastructure and the desired development, and then have arrived at a preferred tax increment area. This is the tax increment area that we are analyzing as part of the project analysis. It's about 667 acres. And at the time, based on this analysis, they had an AV of about $31 million. So you have a balance still of $129 million of an AV that you could potentially use as a second tax increment area if you chose, but it includes the East Blaine area. The three sort of key developments that we've analyzed within the East Blaine area include East Maple Ridge, East Harbor Hills, and then Grandis Pond. This is the levy rate that would get applied inside the tax increment area. You'll see in 2022, you have a levy rate of $8.7 per 1,000 of assessed valuation. But once you exclude then the state's property tax and the school district's exempt levies, you arrive at a levy rate of $3.63 per thousand of assessed value. So it's that increased AV within the tax increment area that gets multiplied by this levy rate that generates the tax revenues that you're utilizing then to pay for the infrastructure. These are the infrastructure needs. They've been identified at a cost of about $14 million. And based on preliminary discussions with city leadership, and staff and the development community is that TIF is to fund between $6.6 and $14 million of that infrastructure. The spread is the result of some additional discussions and negotiations that need to take place. But for purposes of the project analysis, we're evaluating sort of the minimum of 6.6 all the way to the high of $14 million. But it includes electrical, sewer, water, and roadway improvements. This is the baseline of the private development that's expected within at least the three key neighborhoods or development areas within East Blaine. That we know that there's more development areas, but these are the ones that have been identified. The first is East Maple Ridge. In all the developments, we have a value per unit. We have the number of units that are anticipated, the start year, the absorption year, or how long it would take to build out those number of units, and then the total value. it's these total value, then that gets generated into assessed value, and then multiplied by that levy rate that creates the new taxes that you'd be able to, that you're able then to utilize to fund the infrastructure. So in total, we have over $746,000 of private investment at full build out. And you can see the number of years here. For example, under single family development area two, we have single family residences valued at $500,000 per unit, 7 and 8 single family units starting in 2023, and then 2 years to build out. And so nearly $40 million is associated or allocated based on that development. And you can, and further down, you can see the additional developments that come in. But in total, again, almost $750 million of private investment at build out. So we've looked at revenues in sort of a sensitivity analysis by not only just the baseline at build out, but also some alternatives. And so the baseline development could be considered the most aggressive or best case scenario in terms of build out. We've also looked at an alternative one, which doubles the build out year. So any program that showed it was going to be taking 2 years is now going to be 4 years under this alternative one. 4 years becomes 8, 5 years becomes 10, and so on. And also we reduced the commercial property development by 50%. Just to flip back again, we had commercial property identified in the Grandest Pond, 50,000 square feet at $325 per square foot. That generated $16 million. At least in alternative one, we've indicated that that would only be developed at a 50% level. And then we looked at the revenues associated with alternative two, which again utilizes the baseline, but reduces all the residential development by 25%. So all those units would get reduced by 25%. We start all development 2 years later. So a development that was slated to start in 2024 or 2025 now starts in 2026 or 2027. We double the build out or the number of years absorption in all development. And then we reduce commercial development by 75%. And these are the revenues associated with each of those alternatives. So the baseline, and we've looked at two different discount rates to mirror what you might pay on interest of a bond at 4.5% and then 5%. So the baseline at 4.5% would generate $34 million in additional taxes that you could use to fund infrastructure investments over a 25-year period. Alternative one, almost $31 million. And alternative two, $20.2 million. Now, this is the real power of TIF. You can see we've also identified which jurisdictions are contributing towards that TIF project. You'll see the city of Blaine is contributing $9 million from its levy over that 25-year period. But the real power of TIF is you get all the other taxing districts' levy amount as it's applied to that area. So Whatcom County, $7 million, Port of Bellingham, $1.5 million, EMS, $1.8 million. Fire District 21, 9.5, Library 3.2, and Flood Control 1 million. So this is, again, where the power of TIF comes from in terms of being able then to support a significant infrastructure project. If we look at the same scenarios under a 5% interest rate, you can see you lose a few million in between each of the different alternatives because of a 0.5% or 50 basis points more in interest. And so we have a range now between in one scenario of $18 million all the way up to a high of $34 million is possible if development proceeds in a manner that we've described in all these alternatives. And so our next step is to look at, again, the project analysis. We'll refine the revenue estimates, refine the development program. We'll look at the timing of the debt issuance, the debt service payments and the coverage. Maybe there's a reason to have dual issuances to coincide with development activity. We'll refine the but-for requirement, the nexus between the development and why the TIF funds are necessary. We'll look at other incremental taxes too that get generated from the development. It's not just property taxes. Sales taxes will occur on construction. Those will be one-time dollars, as well as you'll get some sales taxes, not only on the commercial development, but ongoing sales tax on all the residential development from online sales. We'll look at the job analysis, both one time and then ongoing, that gets created from this work. And we'll analyze the impacts, if there are any, on affordable housing, on the local business community, local school districts, local fire service. financing plan, duration of the TIA, sort of your debt capacity. We'll be performing some early outreach also to, because this will be new in Whatcom County and the other taxing districts, some early outreach so that they understand the benefits and the mechanics of tax increment financing. And importantly, we're also going to be developing a risk assessment and mitigation plan. So what's the backup plan? What's the safety net? How will you be able to pay for whether it's $6 million or $14 million in debt service if the development, for whatever reason, doesn't occur or occur slower than you anticipate? So we'll have some mitigation plans of how you might be able to pay for that debt service associated with those improvements. TIF doesn't require that you use the resources generated from TIF. Of course, that's what you'd want to do, but you can use any resource possible that you have available to you to pay that debt service, whether it be a grant, whether it be utility funds, however you, whatever monies that you have to pay the debt service is eligible for you. And then finally, just sort of bottom line findings of whether or not the tax increment area meets all the objectives, not only state law, but also provide you with a viable plan. Our schedule is, as I mentioned up front, is to develop the draft of the project analysis by the end of this month, so that city staff and the tax increment area team can quickly review it, make any modifications. We submit that to the state. That then starts their 90-day review. And so that will be February and April timeframe. We'll start performing during that time, once we submit the project analysis to the state, some early outreach to the taxing districts. We'll have a draft ordinance ready so that you could see that, have a maybe potentially another study session with council. This says February, but it could be into March as well. Want to conduct the two public briefings in April and May, and then have the ordinance ready for your consideration for adoption in May, with the TIA being effective on June of this year. And that concludes sort of my presentation, but I'd be glad to address any questions from the council at this time.
Can you please go into greater detail about the potential for defaults and you know, some of the 60-40 split suggestions and what other cities and counties and jurisdictions have done with their default potential?
I think I heard the question. There's a lot of echoing on my part, what I heard through my speaker, but maybe could you repeat again and make sure I understood the question?
Can you tell us more about the default potential and what the split can be and what other jurisdictions have done about default potential?
Sure. So, in order to obtain the sort of the best interest rates, you're able to issue limited term general tax obligation bonds. That's the full faith and credit of the city's resources, meaning that if you default in paying any of those debt service payments, that bondholder is able then to obtain or go after your general resources. And so, it gives you great flexibility in how you pay it, but you are risking your general resources. So how do you protect against that risk? And the way you protect against that risk, at least from our standpoint, is that you want to be conservative, not only in your revenue estimates, but also conservative in your cost estimates associated with the public improvements. You could also, and we'll be looking at this, potentially splitting up the improvements so that they're all not funded at the same time or built at the same time. They're built at the time that development is ready to be responsive to those infrastructure investments. So if it's $14 million, maybe there's half of that would be done initially in the first issuance, and then more development happens after that, and it gives you some revenue stability. And then you fund the second portion of those improvements. That's another strategy. You don't want to issue all of the debt based on what ability you have. And you can see from these projections, we would never propose that you should fund $34 million worth of investment, because it's just too close to what the maximum would be that you'd likely be able to earn from that development. And so you want to be you know, something below all of these numbers. And so the range, you know, the lowest that we have here is 18 million is one scenario. And what you're thinking about is funding and financing something between 7 million and 14 million. So, you know, we've built in some conservativeness into that, into those projections, so that you can make sure that you're able to have enough revenue. But the next part of this would be, what if development just simply doesn't happen? A recession occurs. There's just too many things outside of your control. If development doesn't happen, how are you going to pay the debt service? And that's what we'll look at, what your general reserves are, how you might be able to fund them, maybe with utility expenses, since you utility fees, since you have a fair amount of utility work going on here. But all the TIP projects that we worked on to date, they all have taken a similar approach by simply not utilizing 100%. In most cases, it's 50%, or maybe it's up to 75% of the available TIF resources, as well as, you know, looking at more sensitivity in terms of how these numbers are built. But nonetheless, any TIF project does have a certain amount of risk, and we're just trying to be able to present a plan to you that enables you to manage that risk as best as possible, as much as possible.
You didn't really get to the heart of the question I asked. If the development doesn't happen and the bond issuer still needs to get paid, somebody's going to have to pay that. What are some of the options for structuring who would pay that, and what have other jurisdictions done?
I haven't seen a jurisdiction yet that's been able to have any kind of backup financing plan paid by the developer, if that was your question. If no development occurs, you're still responsible for the debt. And so you have all the resources that you have available at your disposal to pay that debt. How you pay it is really a decision for each jurisdiction. Some cities and jurisdictions will have a development agreement that specifies the, you know, the timing of development, when development will occur, maybe some penalties associated. And I haven't seen one yet that fully backstop all of the tax increment development. One of the things that we're anticipating doing in Blaine is that all the infrastructure would be built by the private developer. So they'll have skin in the game up front by the fact that they'd actually be building the infrastructure for you. And then when that development is completed, they would convey that to you, and you would simply issue the debt and pay the bill associated with that cost.
If you could pause one moment, I just have to ask one of our staff something here. Stacey, Drayton Reach had a bond on their completion bond of some sort. And I remember being rather arduous, and we had to make a lot of exceptions to try and make sure that got going forward. And if we're moving forward with this tax increment financing, could that all be tied in with the expected development entering into the bonding into the agreement, or at completion bonding into the agreement? Do you think it would be possible for us to organize something where the city will go and organize for this kind of financing to enable that infrastructure, but we actually have skin in the game codified in some way from specific developers? Is that something that can happen?
I appreciate your question, council member. I think, and maybe Mr. Stowe, you can comment on this. I think what I heard from Mr. Stowe is that a scenario like that could be anticipated through a potential developer's agreement. Is that correct, Rob?
Yes. So to the extent that you can gain any financial commitment from a developer to essentially backstop the debt that you would issue, certainly you could use those funds to help pay for any debt.
Okay, thank you. Any other council members have questions for Rob here? I see a lot of shaking heads and smirks, but no questions.
No, I just, the one thing that on your timetable, while the state has its 90 days of examining this, we can use that time to have our public briefings. In other words, we don't have to do the public briefings before we hand this to the state from that schedule.
That is correct. The state can be reviewing the document while your public briefings are going on. I apologize if I didn't understand the first question that was asked by one of the council members. I'm having trouble hearing a lot of echoing coming out of the chambers through my speakers for some reason.
Are there any official questions through the microphone for Robert? Go ahead.
So mine is not a question. It's more of a strategy that we're still working on, which is we're very concerned, as you are concerned, about how to backstop this project. And there's lots of conversation yet to be had, so it's not completed. But one of the things that we are looking at are two requests, one to the state legislature and one to the EDI funds through Whatcom County to provide, I guess for the lack of a term, gap financing to pay for whatever debt that's due early into the project. So part of the conversation that Mr. Stowe mentioned is, you know, developers early in to, you'll build the infrastructure with conveyance to the city after. That's a big and important conversation. We also want, though, to have the ability to utilize those TIF funds as appropriate. So one way to do that is to use some bridge financing that we would take the debt out, use the debt to help pay for infrastructure, but use EDI loan money, for example, or grant money to pay the TIF costs to the debt. So all of that is yet to be finalized, but we're very concerned about us just as you are. And I know the developers are as well. I mean, they're very engaged in this conversation. For them, it's a direction and a path forward that they didn't have available to them just until the past couple of months. So everyone who's interested in this project is very engaged and still much more work to do. The questions are very good. I'm going to, I printed out the PowerPoint that we had tonight. I'm going to give each one of you a copy of that so you have a hard copy to look at. And you're free to contact me about any questions you have. And we'll contact Rob, or if we need to have him back with another study session, I'm sure we're able to do that. So just wanted to let you know we're looking at this from all angles.
Was there more in your presentation, sir?
No, I didn't have any more.
Anybody have any more? Yes.
Be able to get a copy of the PowerPoint.
Yeah, he's going to say.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So I just have one question to Rob. In your experience, do the other parties involved, including the fire district, the school, the county, and the state, do they ever, if this is a legitimate project and a legitimate process, do they ever just hold up their hands and say, no, we're not going along with this because we need those funds right up front as well? Funds to buy the new schools that we're going to have to build for this development. We need to build those schools before the people move in. Therefore, we need that those tax revenues ourselves right away.
No, excellent question. And so we have not had all the discussions we've held on tax increment financing with, and remember, tax increment finance only been available in Washington State this last year. So the projects that we have done include three or four other cities, and then three cities still that are also going forward now. And we haven't heard any objections yet from any of the taxing districts associated with those projects based on our early outreach to them. A lot of questions about how it might work, because again, the premise is that those developments would not have happened without the infrastructure investment. Therefore, the additional taxes from the AV would not have gone to those jurisdictions because there would not have been any development. And the fact also that the law requires them that they will continue to get the base revenue that they've received previously, plus they get the new construction value associated with the TIA during that first year. They actually benefit from the project. Now, if a tax increment financing project went forward and it was just sort of claiming a win for the infrastructure. In other words, the infrastructure really wasn't necessary. The development was going to happen anyway. Those taxing districts would have a legitimate argument that at that time to say, wait a minute, you're just claiming a win for what's happening out there with the development, and the infrastructure was just a gift to the developer and you didn't really need to do it. And those tax dollars would have come to us. And so that's a case where they would have a legitimate argument, which just underscores the need to really understand the nexus between the infrastructure investments and the development that's occurring. But in terms of, there is a provision in the law also for fire districts that if you impact more than 20% of their assessed valuation, that you need to have a mitigation plan with the fire district. In Blaine's case, we're well below, I think it's below 1% of the AV of the fire district in terms of the impact. So nothing that's legislatively required, and all the other impacts that we've been able to identify so far are minimal or just don't exist to the other taxing districts.
So school districts, like many other taxing districts, the amount of money they get per property is based on how valuable the property is. So a piece of vacant land is going to be sending a lot less money towards the school than a fully built out house. Considerably more money is going to go to the school that way. So if I'm understanding it correctly, it incentivizes the school should be happy to have these build outs happening because it will result in additional funding coming your way, correct?
Yes. Yeah, again, the school district's levy is excluded from the tax increment financing, but they do benefit as a result of the development occurring, especially in the case of development occurring that's not deducting all of what it can from the tax increment area. In other words, we showed examples where $30 million might get created over a 25-year period, but if you only need six of that, the rest of it gets redistributed amongst all the different taxing districts.
All right. So you said, excuse me, this has only been in play for a year and a half or so, this tax increment financing?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you said there's half a dozen or so municipalities that are working with it. How are things going for them? And could we see some examples of kind of like real world things that are going on with some of those? I mean, you obviously don't have them right now, but can you kind of give us a brief summary of how things are going for them?
Sure. It's pretty early in the process for all of them. The city of Pasco has a tax increment area of a TIA between $32 and $39 million of infrastructure cost and a pretty significant development of over 600 acres. So my firm did that tax increment analysis. That was completed a couple months ago. So that's just starting. No debt's been issued on that project yet and likely won't be issued until later on this year. It doesn't actually get formed, although they adopted the ordinance last year, it doesn't get formed until June 1 of this year, since it was adopted in October, past the June deadline for the previous cycle. The city of Kirkland has another tax increment analysis that I'm performing. It's a similar size project, maybe even a little larger than Pasco. The Port of Pasco was the first project out of the gate, and that was for a $6 or $7 million sort of gap financing associated with a development agreement they had with Dairy Gold. We're also doing a tax increment analysis, city of College Place in Walla Walla County and the city of Chelan. County, where else? Port of Vancouver has a project analysis. And then a number of others that are just in the really sort of the preliminary stage and they won't reach project analysis state by this June. So at least all the cities I could speak to because I'm performing all the cities' work. And then the two Port of Pasco's are done by someone else. And those are both completed and ready for implementation. And I don't think any of them have actually issued any debt yet associated with the process, mainly because none of them were adopted in time to meet last legislative cycle of last June because it just came available. So they're all going to the TIA is officially going to be in effect this June for all of those tax increment areas. And Blaine would be in the same position too if you adopt your ordinance in May.
Since we're going there, you know, I was in Olympia and I actually testified on the bill to put this in state law. I know that it's only been around a year and a half here, but are you familiar with what's been going on with other states that have had this for a longer term?
Yes.
Okay, so perhaps that would be give us more of an illustration of what the other council member was asking about. Can you tell me how it's gone in other states where they've been doing this for quite a number of years?
You know, the states where there have been complaints against tax increment financing and criticism about the laws and this tool is when development, again, would have occurred even without the infrastructure investment. And so those developments or those states that don't do their due diligence to make sure that there's a clear nexus between the development and the tax are likely to come under criticism. And so that's why we've always, although the state provision of the law is a pretty low bar in that it's simply requiring that you have to have more AV with the TIF improvements than you would without the TIF improvements. It doesn't say you have to take into account the cost of the improvements into that calculation. But nonetheless, we think that it's important to really look at TIF like you would any other investment that the city might make, regardless of TIF. Because anytime you put money into roads and infrastructure, you want to get a good return on that investment. And you don't want to necessarily pay for something that you think all the developers in the surrounding area have been paying for or should be paying for. So I think that's the biggest criticism that I hear from tax increment financing across the states. They're all set up a little differently. Washington has its own nuances. Sometimes the money goes directly to the developer. And other times there has to be a public blight declared before tax increment financing can be used. That provision doesn't exist in Washington state law. You can use it anywhere. And for any kind of development, it doesn't have to be a blighted area. And I guess the other nuance also that they have to be publicly owned improvements either by the city, county, or the port. And also, we exclude a lot of the property tax levy from the calculations. And so by its design, TIF is not meant to, I think, fund large scale infrastructure investments unless you have a really large project, because you're really dealing with a levy amount probably between, $2 and $4. You're not dealing with $4, $6, and $10 levies because you're excluding a lot of the states or all of the state and then the schools property tax from that calculation.
Can we go back to the increment area on that slide? Can we look at that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, can you put that in presentation mode? So it's a little bigger for us.
Sure.
Thank you.
Stacy, how many potential units could this represent right here?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So what we are looking at with East Maple Ridge, they have preliminary plat approval and PUD approval for 353 units. Thank you, Mrs. Jansen, for confirming that. We have the Grandis Pond property, which has PUD approval for approximately 1,200 units. There's preliminary plat approval for 383 of those with that 20 to 30 year build out planning horizon, according to the current PUD guidebook. And then the East Harbor Hills property, recently colloquially known as the Martin Street property. We have had some discussions about potential development on there, but again, looking at probably over 100 units on that property, probably. Many more. Yes, 500. Thank you, Skip.
So I have a couple of questions in terms of how the tax increment area is determined. Some of East Maple Ridge is already constructed and the infrastructure is already pre-existing. And then you also have your I'm assuming the boundary, that outer purple boundary is the TIA. So you've also got existing homes that have no need to be looped into the water and the sewer and the electric, because they're already existing homes that have been there for many, many years. So how do they get impacted, if at all, if they're not part of these developments?
There's really no impact to a homeowner or a property owner inside the TA, because the tax is the same whether you're inside the boundary or outside the boundary.
So the home, so existing homeowners shouldn't be expected, they're not going to be expected to, if they're on a well or a septic, they're not going to be expected to convert their system to be, to change to the infrastructure. It's simply how the city's taxes on their property are allocated.
That's correct. It will not, it doesn't have anything to do with sort of hookup requirements to utilities.
I do wonder though that if there might be a conflict for once water and sewer gets out to a certain area, right? So if you're on a septic and sewer comes to you, are you required to get on sewer?
Yes.
Right. So individually the answer could be yes or no depending on that. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that would have nothing to do with the financing. That just would have to do with, like, here's sewer, write us a check. So,
Ryan, did you have some?
Yeah, you might have covered it. So taxes that are not associated, for example, sales tax, real estate tax, those get captured and help to repay the loans.
They could. I mean, you can use any eligible tax or any eligible revenue that's not already dedicated for something else. You could use that to pay any debt service associated with any bonds. But the taxes that we're going to be collecting in this TIA area, the purple area, are just the local property taxes, and they just are from those taxing districts that are not excluded by law, which means everyone except the school districts and the state. So that's, they comprise that $3.63 of levy. And
okay.
It's the primary taxes, but you could use any source of revenue that you are able to collect and have to pay the debt service.
Okay.
But it's mandatory to use that increment financing. It's mandatory to use that to pay off debt. And if we wanted to pay it off sooner, we could use whatever else we wanted, but not necessary.
Right. I mean, it'd be hard to, trying to, I can't think of a situation where you wouldn't want to use that resource rather than an existing resource. You'd want to use that resource because it's there for that. Otherwise, you're right. If you're not utilizing it to pay for any debt service, it's just simply going to get redistributed back to all the different taxing districts then.
What is the usual rate that is charged on that debt compared to, say, taking out a loan for the city to build a new police station? Are they comparable, or is this higher or lower rate of cost?
So the interest rates that, because since you're offering your full faith and credit of your general resources, if you're going to issue debt, it's going to be the best interest rate that you're able to obtain as a jurisdiction or as an entity.
Same.
Yep. The banks just know we were on the hook for it. I want to confirm what we were talking about, actually, the money being spent on for this particular bunch of projects here. Was this utilities? Was this road? Was this sidewalks? Or what was, is, it includes everything? Is there anything forbidden from being on this list here? I mean, It would all be in the paperwork for this. Like, it's very specifically defined what's being built, right?
So these are the infrastructure needs that have been identified, and this is a list that $13.7 million or roughly $14 million. Now, we don't know yet how much TIF might pay for. That's going to be based on future discussions, but at least the $14 million comprises of the bulk of it is roadway improvements at 6.6. And the next chunk is water, and then smaller amounts for electrical and sewer.
Okay. Did y'all have somebody that so you're conferring nothing you'd like to share with the class?
Clarifying.
Okay. Anyone else have anything for the presenter or questions or comments on this issue?
once the presenter's gone, will we have a chance to have a discussion here amongst ourselves for a few minutes? Do we have time?
Or we certainly have time. We have time as long as we take, as long as we don't take any action outside of the actual formal meeting.
And this is the study session. We hope you ask questions. Yeah. His comments. Sure.
But since we have a gentleman here, we could have him handy, it's like a lifeguard here, and if we want to have a conversation, then we might meet him again. Did you want to volunteer any information here?
No, I just think it would be nice to have a little bit of discussion. You know, for the first thing that comes to mind is, you talked about if development was going to happen in this particular area anyway, and it needed a jump start. But it looks like, from what Stacey's given us over the last year, the development is going to happen. And this isn't necessarily, like, there's not a like, need, per se, right? I mean, need is very kind of...
You're questioning the but for.
Right, right. Now, if we have an area that we have a hard time, say we have an area we wanted to regentrify, for lack of a better term, and we wanted to get some newer places in there, would that be a better use of that kind of thing? It's just kind of a discussion that I'm having in my mind about the use of debt. Also, the discussion I have in my mind is what do the people want, and that's not going to be settled here, but do the people of Blaine want to pay part of their taxes for the next 25 years for this new development, or do they want to just let it happen organically, and if it takes longer, that's fine, right? So those are just kind of things that go on in my mind. What does my neighbor think?
That's kind of the question I have, and that's what Shannon was clarifying a moment ago, was that the property tax for that TIA doesn't necessarily go up for example, the people who live there. There's people on North Harvey that have been there for 25, 30, 50 years, right? So the tax doesn't go up. It's just that we, for lack of a better word, pilfer that tax money to pay our debt rather than giving it to the library. And that's the first people that I think of, is because they're broke. It's like, is that what we're talking about here? I mean,
I don't believe that's my understanding.
You know, there's only so much money. If you get a dollar, and they usually get 25, but we're going to take a little extra of that dollar because of the infrastructure.
Yeah, no, my understanding
is he's not going to get.
Right. I don't think that is inconsistent with what I understand to be going on. My understanding was
I don't understand it at all, which is okay. Why I was asking.
Great. So what my understanding is here is when you have a vacant piece of lot that someone keeps saying they're going to build on but doesn't. And getting back to what Councilmember Davidson says, there's some of this looks like it's starting to move along, but there's other parts of this that I would call sluggish, where it's drawings and talk for years and years and years. How long has it been since we didn't build the golf course that made that part of Blaine City Limits? It's been out there a long time, but my understanding is this whole method of financing is a piece of property that doesn't have anything on it, that we know if only there was a nice house on that, we'd be getting some tax money from it. And then we say we'd like to borrow against the tax money we would get if we bring roads and sewer to it, then they build a nice house on it, then that nice house starts paying us way more than what we get for a vacant lot for taxes. So you're talking about other people already established. I didn't have the impression that they were part of this.
In the TIA, that area gets a different tax situation, right?
Okay, I thought this only really applied to, I know the purpose of it is to take vacant, unused property and get future tax revenues in your hand ahead of time. So can we get a clarification? Is this going to change how the tax money is dealt with already existing homes?
No. So the libraries, all the taxing districts are going to continue to get the same tax as a base tax that they'd received prior to development. So they're not harmed in that way. In fact, they actually get a benefit because whenever new construction occurs in the TIA, they get to take that new construction as the increase in their amount that they receive overall as a base. So it actually gets added to. So, but in a general rule is that no, they're not going to receive any less money than they received before. They're still going to be under the same confines of the 101%, limits for property tax growth. The TIA is not limited to that 101% growth, so that could grow at whatever it's going to grow at, and that's what gets taxed then or gets redistributed back to the city. And again, the real power comes from you're just getting the other agencies' tax dollars that are coming to you to help pay the debt that, that created the development in the first place.
Yeah, what I kind of understood, the simple way of looking at it, I could be all wet here, but it'd be like if you had $100 in taxes at the end of the year, and let's say you're paying your tax, just for simple numbers, you got $100 worth of taxes to pay, and part of it goes to the city, part of it goes to the fire department, part of it goes to Whatcom County Fire Department. All these taxes that go out, you still pay the exact same thing, except we need this money. So instead of giving it to fire district, you know, you look on your tax bill, it's got this school district. And I know the school district's not included. It's got this, and this. It's exact same money. Instead of going to them, it just stays here, correct?
Yes. But it's also getting, because you're increasing the AB within the TIA, you're generating more tax within the TIA that gets distributed to you.
Yep. Well, I mean, I get that. You're gonna pay the tax based on what your property is worth, right? You're not gonna pay more than that. And that first money is gonna come back to us to pay off debt. But I might not be explaining kind of what I thought you were alluding to, Garth, but like as new people come in and are paying essentially our debt back with that money, that's a less of an increase for flood, library, fire, EMS.
Right, we skim it off the top first.
Right. So my question is, going back to the 5,000 people that are here now, do they want to essentially front the money so we can have a bunch more homes? Or do they want to say, no, I like my library getting 8 cents and the city of Blaine getting 15 cents and everybody else getting what they need as we slowly move on and not have to pay for it ourselves? Because, you know, as if we have 1,600 more homes, 1,653 more homes, we're still going to have the same library money out there, right? Because we haven't added to it. So anyway, that's just a concern of mine. It's more of a quality of life issue, maybe, than it is this a smart financial thing to do, right? So that's just something that
it's not just the Blaine entities, it's Whatcom County entities that we're collecting this tax from, correct?
Well, the residents are paying the same amount whether it's a TIF or not. It's just, it's not going to go to Whatcom County or the library district or the fire district. They'll continue to get the amount they would have gotten had there not been in development, because they'll have that base amount that'll be frozen in time for them. It's the fact that you generated through your infrastructure investment, because you're risking your by issuing your debt, you're risking that, you know, development's going to come in and pay yourself back. And so you need those other taxing districts levies to help pay yourself back for the debt that you've issued. But
so
you're not going to be harmed by that.
Whatcom County is going to get a vacant lots amount of tax on the property we're doing this to, right?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
So if we have a vacant lot and it's only generating a little bit of tax revenue, Whatcom gets part of that. If we start doing this system, Whatcom still gets the vacant lot amount of money that they would have been getting while we're building it up and improving it, right?
Correct. They probably get more because you're not going to tap into all of it that's going to come that's available based on the
right. So
simplistic terms, it's almost like freezing as of today. This is the tax. Anything 5 years, 6 years, 7 years from now, anything off the top is going to go.
So context, just maybe it'll help me understand. But once this debt were repaid, then the amount of tax would then get redistributed as it should.
Yes.
Right?
Once we were performed,
once we're paid first, it's going to skim it off.
Once we performed our little time traveling experiment and we're all evened up, right, then it benefits all the taxing districts because that vacant lot is now productive.
Yeah, we're basically taxpayers. Fast forward,
yes,
on the development, getting it going,
yes,
and then you get the windfall. So
can I just come back to Gar's question? Once we get this TIF established, before we get any taxpayers on that property, we're already going to be having to pay something off on that debt. Is that correct?
Well, it depends on when you issue the debt. You have, the law requires that you initiate the public improvements within 5 years, unless there's good cause and they don't define what that would be. But I would imagine it could be simple things such as, you know, construction delays or design delays. But anyway, you basically have 5 years to start construction. So you have that sort of window as to when you can issue the debt. So you'll want to time the debt issuance based on the level of development activity or development interest in that area, so that you don't, because it'll most likely in all scenarios, you'll have some years in the beginning before the development stabilizes that you have to finance that debt and pay some interim, some gap financing in the early years until the development stabilizes and generates enough revenue. Or you just sort of structure the debt so it's, you know, interest only and sort of comports to the type of revenue that you're able to collect over the period of time.
And that essentially, though, still, whenever we receive those funds, whether we've got a house built on that property or not, we are going to be paying interest, even if it's only interest only. We're going to be paying interest on that, which we are not going to get anything back until there's a house with a taxpayer in on it. And to this point, during that period of time, however many years or whatever delay, some of the other things that the city does need money for may be in jeopardy. And this is what we as a city council have to be aware of and have to be prepared to accept.
That's one of the things we'll look at in analysis is those years where there's a gap in revenues based on your debt service. We can simply look at it as a way, you know, we spread out debt service in equal payments over 25 years and then determine how much revenue you'll have coming in each and every year. And it's most likely in the early years, you will have some years that you'll need to finance on an interim basis with some other source of funds. Of course, you can pay yourself back in later years, but we just have to analyze, you know, if you're capable of doing that.
But you were suggesting that we'd be well advised to kind of wait until the bulldozers are about to show up to actually accept the money and start clock ticking on the owing money, right?
Yeah, in this case, it's somewhat built in by the developer's offer to build the infrastructure. And so, you know, developments is not going to want to put in $14 million of infrastructure without the recognition that, one, they're going to get paid back, but two, if they're sharing in that cost, if you only pay $6 million, they're paying the rest of it, they're going to be incentivized to move that development along and, you know, start earning money on that property. But in other words, I think, yes, you're correct. You don't want to necessarily issue debt until you got a high level of confidence that development's going to follow closely behind.
So in this outlined purple area where all these homes are, anybody in that section, I mean, we got a lot of Grandis Pond, but there's other places around Grandis Pond. Let's say once we get it all going, that say somebody else wants to build 20, 30 homes. That's included too, right? Because there's a lot more land out there.
There is, yes. Anything that gets developed in that TIA would contribute towards the debt service that you're paying for improvements.
Okay.
Within the map, it's in your hand.
Yeah.
For me, I'm the kind of guy that those are numbers I would like to look at, right? If we have 1,653 potential lots, but we have maybe 1,000 more we could have potentially, that is something that would kind of help me kind of think that this maybe is a better idea, as well as the bonds they were talking about, Dan. I mean, is it even possible to say get a 25-year bond that we pay nothing on for 3 years, a little bit on for the next 3 years, and then full bore after that? How does that work?
Well, you would. If you're going to sort of reduce your interest rate in the beginning, you're going to pay more long term for the bond itself.
So yes, it is potential that you could find a bank that'd be willing to do that. However, it could be difficult. I mean, if you're going to say we don't want to pay anything on it for 3 years, you could find some bank that'll do it, because we'll put out, and once we actually do the bond, we'll put out a proposal and have all the banks basically bid, and then we can take the best deal. But we can put in there saying, you know, can we do no payments for 3 years,
right,
or interest only payments for 3 years? Yeah. And I ran just a few numbers just in case if you're interested. So just in case you're interested, you can keep this in your head of how much this would cost. But if we're borrowing anywhere from 6 million to 14 million, and the range is 4.5 to around 5%, and this would be on a 20-year bond, so 25 years is another option. Your payments are going to be anywhere from $456,000 a year to $1.1 million a year on 14 million. So if you've got 3 years where we're not getting any revenue in, and let's say you borrow the whole 14 million, but you know, we can do it in chunks. The risk is you have 1.1 million a year that we have to pay. And if we're not getting revenue in, we got to find that from somewhere. And so it could either be grants, or we could raise rates in the utility funds to pay the general fund for those payments for the years that the revenues aren't coming in. So that's the risk, is on years that we're waiting for homes to be developed, we're still on the hook for the money that we borrowed.
Well, Rob was strongly suggesting that we do this in phases, not in all one big
chunk. Sure. So yeah, if we did it in phases, essentially it's about, for every million that you're borrowing, it's around, like, I think it's 70 some thousand a year that we need to pay. So yeah, we can do it in chunks. You wouldn't want to borrow the whole 14 million up front. That's just to give you an idea of what we'd be paying from 6 to 14 million.
Okay. I think it'd be going a lot faster too with building homes if we were prepared to have the home. It ain't the developers that are holding the houses up. City holding the developers up.
Oh, they're ready to go?
They're up there. Have you been up there yet?
Yep.
Have you seen any homes?
Yeah, I've seen some. But
they can't get water to up, can't get sewer.
Yeah, so that's the next step. Garth, I really, really care what you have to say about this, and it seems, I haven't been hearing, it seems like you've got some ideas that I would love you share with everybody.
I'm just trying to understand it.
So if you've got questions, and let's make this a discussion. I would really encourage you to.
Well, I'm interested to see what his step two analysis of impacts is, and what sort of mitigation issues. You know, I mean, the ideas they may have in their step two, which at some point we will be able to see, right? So.
Karina, did you have anything you wanted to ask or suggest about this?
I don't have any additional questions.
Okay.
When can we expect step two to be reviewed?
So we anticipate having the project analysis completed the end of January, first part of February, because we want to submit to the state to get them started on their review. And at that time, it'll be available for the city council's review as well. In a draft form.
Are the council members?
Step one. Analysis is step one. Step two, there's no page numbers on this, but step two would include timing of debt issuance, but-for requirement analysis, the other job analysis, impact analysis, finance plan, duration of TIA, debt capacity. That's interesting, with a few other things that are on our agenda here lately. That sort of thing, the step two elements, when would that be expected?
That's the project, essentially the project analysis. All that gets put into a project analysis, all those different elements, and that'll be available end of January, end of this month, 1st of February. We're just in mid-process now of completing it and working on it.
Okay, with what we've heard in this presentation today, are there members of council who are finding that this entire thing is a really bad idea? And if so, it would be great to have some conversations about the pros and cons while we have the professional here, and while this is we're scheduled to talk about it now.
A really good idea.
Or
yeah, be positive.
Likewise. So
we'll stay right where we're at if we don't do something. You know that? I mean, we got an opportunity here. We got people sitting here. Do you talk to the developers or do you just talk to the Olympia people? Have you talked to the developers? Have you went up and talked to them? Have you?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
Go ahead. No.
I think it's more a matter of getting the bigger picture, right? Because it's not just about the developers. It's about finances in the long term. It's about what the people of the city of Blaine want in the long term, right? I'm happy to have the developers come and talk to us about whatever they want, you know.
We can talk to them.
We can do that too, right? But like at the same time, I don't necessarily work for the developers. I work for everybody in the city of Blaine, and so we have to.
That's what they want.
They are. They're people in the city of Blaine. Absolutely. I know they live here, okay? But I don't necessarily need to make legislation to make sure that the developers can build 1,654 houses.
I just think you need to talk both sides.
Absolutely, you do. Absolutely, and I'm happy to do that. So, have you been talking to the other side? Do you know what the people of Blaine want, or do you just know what the developers want?
No, I talk to the people every day. Yeah. Every day. And what I see downtown there is, hey, we got $1 million deficit coming up because we don't do nothing. We've done the same thing. You know, we keep the same thing going. You know the old story. We're going to go down. We're going to start cutting people around here. You got to invest. There's got to be a risk. Always. If you don't want no risk, then hey, leave it the way it is. Watch what happens down there.
Well, and I'm not saying that I'm against this. I think we need to have all the information. This is a nice 45-minute or 30-minute presentation, but I'm not going to risk the future of Blaine on a presentation that, you know, looks good on paper, but we don't know the details to it, right?
I just wish we'd be more proactive in talking both sides. And believe me, I talk to people every day, both sides, every day. And the people in Blaine, some of the old people, you know, they don't want a trailer up there, but go look at their homes too. You know, they're worse shape than 99% of what these guys are building. And people don't like change, but if we don't have change, we are going to die. That's the way I look at it. And that's my opinion. And I've just seen what's happened here. Look at the record that this city's done here. And it's not very good. Look at these guys, the situation we're in now with the infrastructure, the water, the sewer. Hasn't been taken care of. Didn't think it was going to happen. That's a great way to look at things. You have to think ahead 5, 10, 15 years to build this town up. But if we don't do anything, watch what happens. Just watch what happens. If you're thinking for the people, this is why we were elected. Listen to them. You know, I mean, they want a nice town. They want a nice place to live. If we don't have you, if we don't do anything and just keep doing what we're doing, we got $1 million deficit coming up because we haven't been doing anything.
To be really, really clear, Mike, what I did down in Olympia is help this law get enacted so that we'd have this tool available to us. And now the matter is whether or not there's a minimum of 4 of the 7 of us who want to use that tool. So, I mean, part of what I did my part is I made this to be an option we have.
Thank you. We got to be more positive, you know, just instead of this is a real bad idea. I wish it would be presented to, hey, let's find out.
I don't think anybody said it was a bad idea. It's just that we don't know what the idea is entirely. We have to know the ramifications on it. I talk to a lot of people too. I do talk to developers. That's sort of a question I have for John after this, because I've worked on both of those developments. Okay. And what I do hear from many of my constituents is why the hell are you talking about paying for their infrastructure in those terms and some more colorful? So I do. I mean, I get it from both sides too. And I do understand some of the situation. I don't understand this TIF shell game that's going on here. And that's all I want is just more information about what this is and how it applies to us and what our outlook on it is for before I can say to my friends and constituents, well, no, this, because I'm going to be able to explain this to people, and I can't explain it to y'all.
An important thing I can tell you right now is the future house, right now it's a vacant lot, but the future house that's going to be there is paying for it. We're traveling in the future, taking that tax money and spending it now.
I get that, but what I get is, if you guys, you know, get, if you guys put us in debt for $14 million, $6 million, or $2 million, you know, that then, if something goes wrong up there, those houses don't get built. That does go back to the constituents of Blaine. They do share in that debt because they're going to pay for it. And that's the situation, the black and white of it, that they're not just, I mean, put it on the table.
Yeah, if you anticipate that not much money can be made in building and selling houses sometime in the near future, that would adversely...
Washington State is ranked 50th in the country for the amount of available housing. We're the worst.
Yep.
We're the worst.
Worst
and I work on housing developments and have for about 24 years now. I do very large housing developments, very large, okay, all over the state, and infrastructure projects. I'm a bit familiar with what's going on, and I do see that there's a need, and I get that. I'm talking about justifying my putting the constituents into a position where I'm going to have to raise their taxes. We're going to raise their taxes here tonight, okay, right? This thing goes south. We're going to raise their taxes again to pay it.
Also, you got to ask.
That's what I'm saying.
What if you don't do?
That's not the point. That is not the point. I mean, we're doing the best we can. I'm just trying to say that I need to be able to explain this to my neighbor who isn't here and justify that it's no. This is. I know enough about this to know what's a positive. I know why it's a good idea. I need to know why it's a bad idea. Because I haven't really, I mean, I know the debt's a problem. The interest rates are not going down, people. And so doing it now is the best time to do it. Because if we dilly-dally it now, it's going to be 8%. You want to put it off for 3 years, some bank might be able to let us do that, but it's going to be 10% when you do start paying. They're just going to, okay, well, then you can pay 12% for 3 years if you don't pay us for 3 years. I mean, there's these different things, right? And I just want to know what all these other little risks and all this kind of stuff, because that's what people want to know. They don't want to know the positives, because having those houses up there and having an increased tax base and having that sort of thing available, once this is paid off, and then those taxes do increase for the library and for everybody else, right? I mean, then it gets redistributed after the debt's paid off. Those taxes do come out. People are here. They're paying for, hopefully, at the grocery store, hopefully, at some of the other things that are coming in. I get that, and that's the good stuff. I really wanted to have a very good idea of the bad stuff so that we can make a absolutely weighted decision, balanced decision, that we can talk to people about and that we understand. That's all I was saying.
Great. And I think we can make sure you also, if a question pops into your head sometime after this meeting, that you can directly talk to a professional and get the horse's mouth on that. Unless any other council member has any comment on this issue, we should move along to talking about our planning commissioner renewal or the candidacy of filling a planning commission spot. Anybody else have anything more on the tax increment financing issue? Okay. Okay, we're gonna have a powder the nose break for just a few moments. We have a quick moment of business we need to complete before the meeting begins. And we're going to briefly be speaking with a candidate for appointment and or to the planning commission. Sam, who would that be? And are they here?
Yes.
That'd be Kevin Owens, and yes, he's in the audience, right?
Okay, please approach the podium, sir. Please state your name and address, as is the custom for talking in front of the council.
Thank you. It's Kevin Owens, 2283 Seaside Drive, Blaine, Washington.
Great. Can you tell us why you want to serve an additional term on the planning commission?
Really, it's the same three or four reasons that made me apply for the position 4 years ago, which is that my wife and I have had the great fortune of living in many great cities in North America, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, San Francisco, Portland, Maine, Phoenix for a little while. And when we arrived in Blair, we decided this is the last city we want to live in. And I'd like to be able to take the experience of having lived in all of those other cities and share some of that experience and maybe contribute to both the development and preservation of Blaine.
Okay, excellent. The Planning Commission is an advisory board to the City Council and provides recommendations on proposed land use regulations and updates to the comprehensive plan. Can you describe the skills and knowledge that you apply when considering proposed legislation?
I think probably the skill that I bring to the commission mostly is listening. In my professional career, I worked internally in some large corporations as a consultant to various teams. And the very first thing that one had to learn was to listen to what the concerns of the various bodies were, and then try and internalize what you've heard and be able to make sense of it, which I think is the second characteristic that I bring, perhaps, which is I have no hesitation whatsoever to looking stupid in front of anybody if I have to ask a question four times to be able to get an answer that I can understand and internalize. I will do that. And I won't engage in conversation or debate if I don't feel that I understand the issue at hand. And then perhaps the third thing is a sort of historical context that I've developed over 4 years on the Planning Commission that I can now, when an issue comes up, I can go, we've been here before. We've talked about maybe not this specific thing, but we've talked about something very related to it, and that gets brought into the conversation and to the deliberation and decision making.
Excellent. And one or two of the most important concerns or issues that you see ahead for the city in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think vibrancy is a very important concern. I don't think we're going to grow the city by opening a new bakery or a new restaurant. I think we're going to grow the city by finding a new somebody who will attract smart and talented employees and workers, somebody who will be here for the long haul, somebody who will contribute to the tax base, and maybe it's somebody who attracts lots of tourists. Maybe it's a museum, or maybe it's a planetarium or something of that nature. It doesn't necessarily have to be a corporation, but I don't think it's going to be a bakery. I think the second thing is affordability. And if I've seen something that has disturbed me the most in the development of other cities that I've lived in, it's as the vibrancy increases, so does the cost of living. And I think it's very destructive to a city to price itself to the point where all of the people who built the city have to move away because they can't afford to live here anymore. And I think the third thing is sustainability. Whether we like to believe it or not, it's coming at us. And just because we're a small city doesn't mean it's not going to affect us and that we don't have to deal with it.
Great. Thank you very much. Any members of the council wish to ask Mr. Owens anything?
Another question. Kevin, you talked about affordable housing. If you had a magic wand and could build 200 houses tomorrow and, pick a spot in Blaine, what would you look for in something that could be affordable housing for young families who maybe wanted to get into their first house?
Innovation, without a question. That would be the first thing I would look for. What is the plan that is going to make it different? I don't think affordability needs to be low quality or unattractive or, it doesn't need to become a ghetto. I think with innovation and good design, affordability can be just as exciting as any other kind of housing that we build.
Thank you.
All
right, Kate, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks very much.
Okay, and it looks like we're coming into I don't know if we trust this clock here, but within a minute or two, we should...
1 minute.
1 minute fast. And so very soon from now, we'll be starting the regular council meeting. Thank you.